If they are interested, you can learn a lot about chord shapes and chord inversions from playing connections. Then you can play those chord shapes and string them together into a chord progression, and you're actually able to do vamping with chords of the chords for the piece as well. And then you can, obviously, you can sort of completely go freeform as well. But they lend themselves very well. If you learn them as pieces, they're good piano repertoire for your technique and for sight reading and for articulation and pedaling and all that.
Well, howdy, teachers of the world. It's great to be with you again today for another episode of the Topcast. This is episode number 229. And if you'd like to find out more about today's episode, grab a transcript, anything like that, head over to topmusic.co/episode229 for all the details and show notes. Now, this is your last chance to sign up for our 5-day challenge. It's coming up next week. So make sure you head over to topmusic.co/challenge to find out exactly what's happening and what we're talking about and how much it's going to impact you and your students for the rest of this year. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. We've got 5 days, and they're not full days, by the way. They're just 30 minutes per day with some actionable homework each night to do to progress and improve things. And then you can bring them back for the next day and ask more questions. We're doing it over 5 days towards the end of February. It's going to make you the coolest teacher on the block by far. Your students are going to love the things that you're going to be able to do with them after this with confidence, because we're talking about those notebook teaching techniques and, in fact, our top three that are going to absolutely hook your students this year. Even if you have explored a little bit of some of my notebook techniques, then this will actually get you to take that extra step and take action on those things, because, as I said, we're going to be giving you the skills that you need and then giving you the tasks that you need to do them to give you that confidence. I cannot wait to start this. It's going to be held at the end of February with Sarah Buckley, our marketing manager here at topmusic.co, and it's going to be an absolute blast. So make sure you head over to topmusic.co/challenge. So today on the podcast, I'm catching up with an old friend, and probably an old friend of many of yours as well. It's the wonderful Christopher Norton, who almost really needs no introduction, but just for some background, he's a composer, arranger, educationalist, and producer, and he's universally regarded as a leader in his field. He was born in 1953 and actually was a New Zealander, but now based in Canada. And his long and fruitful association with Boosey and Hawkes resulted in the world-famous Micro Jazz series. And put your hand up if you've taught the Micro Jazz series. Yep, my hand's up. I reckon most of the world's teachers' hands are up. He's in high demand for his unique and creative presentations and offers sessions ranging from improvisation coaching for private teachers. He adjudicates piano festivals and literally gives masterclasses all over the world. And as you'll hear in today's episode, has moved all of that online. He's a prolific composer, both of pedagogical piano music, but also of suites for two pianos and sonatas and micro musicals and just so much incredible stuff. He now lives with his wife, Wendy, another composer in Stratford, Ontario, Canada, and we welcome him today to chat about what he's been up to. All right, Christopher Norton, welcome back to the show after like 5 years since you were last on it. How are you going?
Good. I believe I was the second person up or something.
You were definitely in the first three. I think you might have been number two. That is true. And yeah, I think there's probably some people listening today who remember that very episode. And I remember we filmed it in a hotel you were staying at in Melbourne because you were doing a workshop here. Is that right?
I think so, a conference or something. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a while since I've been in Australia because obviously I was due to come to Australia to do a tour. And the pandemic hit, so we've been stuck in a small town in Canada ever since. But in fact, we quite like it.
Well, look, I really just want to make this a catch up with you, find out what you've been up to, and let all our listeners know what you've been up to, the kinds of releases you've been creating. So, tell us firstly, you're based now in Canada.
Yeah.
Whereas you were in England for a little while. So whereabouts are you in Canada, and what kind of, are you teaching still or just creating music?
Well, in fact, I've never taught.
Okay, that's going to blow some people's minds here.
Yeah. I mean, when I say I never taught, I taught at university level way back, but in fact, I've been a full-time composer since 1980 and made enough of a living from it quickly enough that I've never had to teach. And also, of course, if you're doing the kind of work I do, teaching becomes awkward because you keep having to reschedule because you're not there. Funny enough, I'm doing more teaching now than I have. I slightly backtrack because, in fact, I've ended up with lots of webinars and private lessons and masterclasses and things. I've just done two big blocks to China and doing stuff in the States and in Canada as well. So, and some of it involves private teaching of classical students, which is quite interesting. And I don't really mind. One of them is an interesting case. He's a 13-year-old boy who seems to be able to memorize things like the Chopin Fantasy Impromptu in 2 weeks and play it reasonably competently as well. So his teachers don't know what to do with it because he's so prodigious, you know.
Mm.
But what I discovered is when you analyze that he was actually had a lot of things wrong with the way he was playing. Because I get on well with him, I think he took it from me. And when we did easier pieces, the same faults were in evidence, even if he did something very straightforward, like a scale. So sort of skating over the surface somewhat technically, if you like. So I found that interesting. I'm not angling for teaching, but I am being offered opportunities. I tend to say yes, but not try and look for them. I suppose
right. Okay. And if there's one thing that has come out of the pandemic, this opportunity for us to do more teaching online, and in your case, masterclasses,
yeah,
with people all around the world is quite a good outcome in some ways. How are you finding the experience of teaching through online platforms?
Oh, I'm finding it ends up not that different from when you do things live, because I do quite a lot of group work. I've just done some very interesting workshops with a group of 8 teachers in Edmonton, Alberta. Very keen. And we did 2 2.5-hour sessions on improvising and accompaniment styles. Mm-hmm. And I gave them little tasks and everybody, you know, spent a couple of minutes working away on something, not too hard. And then basically they then shared their screen. Each of them came on screen and did what they'd prepared. So we did it like a live event, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked quite well because that's what I tend to do. I tend to have a group of kids and everybody has a go and they feel comfortable enough if you play it right so that they feel comfortable to try something out even with other people listening. And I think I'll be doing more of that with teachers in particular where you say, let's do something reasonably straightforward and all have a go.
Yeah, mute yourself while you practice. Here's 5 minutes because you're at a piano and then each in turn can perform it. I spoke at Paul Adrea's Piano Connect just last weekend, and I noticed for the first time then the advantage of a conference where everyone's at home in front of a piano is actually really, really good because people can demonstrate things and you don't have to have a room full of 30 keyboards, which is quite hard to find.
Yeah. And in fact, the sound, particularly for things like that, the sound quality isn't quite so important. Obviously, it's a real nuisance. I've sat in on certain exams here in Canada just out of interest. Not doing them, but watching the examiners deal with the children. I thought, what a hard job that is because the sound is so poor that all you can do is tell whether they're playing in time. And even then you can't be sure because some of the time that doesn't play in time either.
It's true.
But doing things like group workshops on accompaniment styles, which is what I've been doing recently. I took a Christmas carol, for instance, and said, this is what I would do with it and gave them the basic chords and then said, now what you can do is do X, Y, Z to make it sound, you know, a bit more like a piece of music and not too plain, if you like.
Mm.
But that the medium suits that quite well.
Mm.
I think there are some things it's good for. And what can you do? I mean, I'm not going to go to Alberta and fly all the way there and then talk to a group of 8 teachers and risk spreading a pandemic,
you know? Right? Yeah.
So we are kind of stuck with it for the time being. Are you coming out the other side somewhat in Melbourne?
We are. We've had the harshest lockdown in the world through our winter, which is the middle of our year, because a second wave hit us and it ended up eradicating the virus, which wasn't even the plan, but it's happened. So we went for, I can't remember, 60 days or something with not a single new case. And then we got a few and then it went away again. So we're actually enjoying a relatively normal existence here, which I don't say gloatingly because I know exactly what everyone in lockdown countries is going through right now, because we went through it all.
Yeah, particularly America, because, I mean, we've got a lockdown here, but there's very few cases where we are in Stratford, relatively, but they have the lockdown because there are some, you know what I mean? It's mostly nursing homes, rather than the general public, if you like, which are being affected. So. Mm.
Now, moving on to compositions, you've talked about a little bit about your workshops. I was actually just on a call with one of our members, Jana Williamson, who was so excited to hear that I was talking to you, because she was just teaching with your APP, your American Popular Piano, and your Connection series. And she loves them. And her son even teaches himself and loves the backing tracks and everything. So what composing are you doing, if any, at the moment?
Well, I've got a lot of stuff. I'm still with Boosey and Hawkes. In fact, I first wrote the Micro Jazz books in 1981, so this year is the 40th anniversary of Micro Jazz.
Does that make you feel a bit old, Chris?
I know, I am old. but they actually came out in 1983, so the actual anniversary of the books coming out is in 2023. But the actual, you know, writing of the stuff was 1981. And what's interesting about that is that because I've been in lockdown, I've been looking through my archive like you do, and I discovered a great swathe of piano pieces, all harder than Micro Jazz Collection 3, but not as hard as the Preludes. And I thought the pieces were really good, and Boosey and Hawkes agreed with me, and they are putting two new books out called Micro Jazz Collection 4 and 5, which are brand new.
40 years later. Love
40
it.
Years later. But these were not written in the 80s. These were written about 2005, I think, because I was writing things, I think, thinking about the notion of perhaps American popular piano having 9 and 10, you know, because in Canada, of course, there are 10 levels.
Mm.
So I wrote all these pieces, but then we ended up only doing 8, and I'd forgotten I'd written them. But when I looked at them, they had my name on them, and they, you know what I mean? I assume they're
mine. You're pretty sure they're yours?
Yeah. But I'm really pleased with them. And there's 36 pieces, which is quite,
oh my goodness. You know,
quite a lot of pieces.
What a find.
But on top of that, I just got the, not that it'll mean anything to you, but I can show you, pick it up on the screen. I just got this today, which is the proofs of Micro Jazz Duet Collection 4, because I discovered also 16 new duets, which were written about that time as well.
Ah, cool.
And so Boosey and Hawkes are actually putting out extensions of the Micro Jazz piano books, of all things, and it'll happen quite soon. I mean, I've got the proofs, so I'm obviously pretty well along the line there. I should add in passing that we're doing backing tracks for all the products still, and I'm also doing MIDI files, and I'll be putting them on Superscore as well. So I'm putting them across various platforms as well.
Wow. Now, I can see you're next to a piano. Now,
yeah.
Zoom quality, audio quality aside, would you be prepared to play a bit of one of the unreleased Christopher Norton versions?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I'm just checking through proofs at the moment, actually. Although, one thing I can do, of course, I don't want to play it for you, because I can share the screen otherwise, and you get a very good sound quality from inside the piano. But here's a few bars of something called Gypsy Swing. Can you hear that all right?
Yep.
So.
I like it. Yeah, unfortunately, we know the kind of quality that's coming through. Yeah. We got a glimpse of it though. Very groovy, Chris.
Yeah, but they're very attractive tunes, because I'm a tune writer deep down.
Mm.
And that's one of 36 new pieces, which I'm really pleased with. So that's very exciting.
That's very good. Has Boosie given you a release date for that, for people to look out for?
I think it's probably going to be, March or something. I mean, it's going to be quite soon.
Great. That's very exciting.
Yeah. But the other thing which is interesting, this may or may not mean anything to you, but I came to Canada partly because I married a Canadian in 2014, and she's also a very good composer, and she and I have written 30 musicals for schools between us.
These are the micro musicals, right?
That's right. And six of them were done by Boosie and Hawkes. But in fact, we've been in the middle of preparing another 24 of them, which are going to be released through Amazon. In other words, Boosie and Hawkes are publishing them, but they'll be available anywhere, kind of in a print on demand kind of way. So that's rather nice as well.
And what kind of, for our teachers listening, some of them do work in schools and things. Are they mostly suited to primary schools?
They were written for up to age 11, but in fact they've been done by older students as well. So they can probably go up to high school students as well. I've actually, again, got something here which I've just got copies of. This is Songs from the Micro Musicals.
Oh, so you've pulled out some of your best songs from those musicals.
Well, what I've done, I've worked with a very good vocal teacher in Britain, in London, and we've got five grades of low and high voice. So the pieces are graded, and in fact, they've already been selected for the examination list for Conservatory of Canada here in Canada. So they can be chosen. And in fact, I'm working with a music school at the moment who I'm doing a lot of work with online, and they've got a big music theatre division, and they're going to actually record all of the songs, probably 100 of them, with their students as a little project.
Very nice. Do you write the lyrics as well when you do these musicals?
I do. I have in the past written the lyrics, but in fact, my wife's an extremely good lyricist, and it's quite nice having somebody else's words to work with.
Right.
So it's a mixture of her and me that are featured on these. But what I'm saying is, this is another Boosie and Hawkes owned product, although it's being put out through my own company, because you know all about the fact that I've got another little line called 80 Days, which is actually my own stuff. But the Connections series is at the heart of it, which I own myself.
So Connections is, because that was published externally, you're self-publishing now through 80 Days Publishing, is that right?
Well, I bought the publishing rights from the Royal Conservatory in Canada, who told me that they were available. So I bought the entire series, and I've expanded it both ways. So there's actually a 9 and 10 now available, which are really advanced pieces. But what's just come out is Connections Preparatory, so there's actually a really easy book as well.
I've always loved the Connections series. For those of you who haven't explored this, then go to your music store, check out these books by Chris, because there's something about your writing my students have always loved, and I've loved teaching them. I think it's the harmony, the melody, particularly the melody, the patterns in them, they're just groovy and funky, and you write in so many different styles. This is what I almost struggle to understand, how you go from Latin to samba to rock to funk. How have you got such experience in all these different styles?
I played in a number of bands, for a start, who played a variety of styles. In fact, funny enough, I was listening to a song yesterday, because I was in one of New Zealand's best-known gospel bands, before I left the country.
A gospel band, as in the band that plays for a gospel service?
Well, like I'm talking about bands who play Christian music.
Okay.
So which is a slightly different thing. But this band had very good musicians in it. In fact, one of them I'm still in close contact with, he was a fantastic guitar player. He's the actual subject of one of my favorite stories about musicians, because years ago, when I first started to play in bands, he was in the band, my first band I was ever in. I just won New Zealand's main concerto competition and playing a Prokofiev concerto, and this particular band lost their keyboard player, and they said, "You seem to be able to play the piano. Would you like to join the band?"
That's an understatement, yeah.
but I'd never, I'd sort of played by ear and all that, but I'd never really kind of played in a band before. But I loved his improvising, and I said to him, "What's your secret?" And he put two fingers up, and I said, I thought, "Here it comes." And he said, "Pentatonic minor and pentatonic major."
And that's all you need.
And in fact, he then spent the next 30 or 40 years working as the chief economic forecaster for the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. And I spoke to him a couple of years ago and said, what can you tell me about the New Zealand economy? And he said, there are three things I've learned through being an economic forecaster. It's the same thing, three fingers up this time. He said, things can go up, things can go down, things can stay the same.
He's good at simplifying ideas and concepts.
But the pentatonic major and minor is interesting because, in fact, nearly everything I write can be improvised on with pentatonic scales for a start, but a lot of it is pentatonic melodies. There's no doubt about it. I'm sort of driven deep down by folk music in that sense. And indeed, most popular music is pentatonic.
Absolutely.
At root.
It works. It just gels with the human body, I think. Like, for some reason, there's something about pentatonic melodies that they just sit well with us.
Well, even the piece I played, it just played, although it's chromatic, it's really pentatonic minor at root. It's just got some chromatic inflections. So that's interesting. Anyway, coming back to Connections, that was written for the Royal Conservatory. They basically asked me to write 8 books, which were equivalent of grades 1 to 8. A bit like the AMEB years ago had a List D, which was pretty much a Christopher Norton syllabus. This was the Christopher Norton syllabus.
It actually was. You're right.
Yeah. But this is a Christopher Norton syllabus in Canada, and there's still loads of Connections pieces on the Royal Conservatory syllabus. I mean, like a lot of them. So you could do pieces at every grade from the Connections series. But they also, I've always liked the idea of having backing tracks, and the backing tracks are proving very interesting for teachers because one thing I've done, which has just come out, is teacher accompaniments to the Connections series. I've done 2 books, and they're done now, but I'm going on and doing the rest. When I do workshops, I jam along with students on another piano. So if they're playing, I'll play an accompaniment off the top of my head. But if there's a backing track playing, I'll do the same. So what I've done is tried to figure out teacher accompaniments, which actually fit with both the student part and the backing track.
It's a great idea.
They're not too hard to play either, but you could actually do it as a piece for 2 pianos because it's not piano duet, it's 2 pianos.
Mm.
But that's proved to be, teachers have loved that idea and it teaches them quite a lot about the style. Because the thing about the backing tracks, that's what it is apart from the idea of being able to create an accompaniment which feels idiomatic, you're learning how to play a style. They lend themselves very well to study of chords and chord inversions because when I've done some analysis with the teachers in Alberta of Connections pieces and discovered I'm using really obscure chords, you know, that I didn't really think about it. But in fact, I looked at the chord, oh, that's E-flat major 9 over G or whatever.
Mm.
And so if they are interested, you can learn a lot about chord shapes and chord inversions from playing Connections. Then you can play those chord shapes and string them together into a chord progression, and you're actually able to do vamping with chords of the chords for the piece as well. And then you can, obviously, you can sort of completely go freeform as well.
Hmm.
But they lend themselves very well. If you learn them as pieces, they're good piano repertoire for your technique and for sight reading and for articulation and pedaling and all that. But there's also a hidden agenda with Connections and with microjazz that they actually are a whole kind of repository of musical styles, which you can explore in depth or very much simpler than in depth as well.
Mm.
And I know when I've done these things with teachers, they love the fact that, like, I was doing something with them where I just had C7, yeah, and then F7. And G7, and they were easy to. They picked up those particular inversions straight away. That was easy for them. And then I said, "Now we're going to play the whole chord progression with the track," and they found it almost a revelation. I mean, it's sitting there. Obviously, you can do it, but it just needs somebody to point it out.
Mm, absolutely.
I'm hoping teachers will see what I'm doing in a way and think I could probably do that myself. You know, using the same material, like going to another Connections piece and just dig around to see what the chords are and then create a little chord structure and also some chords to learn as individual chords. Because that's another thing which teachers really like doing, as I say, just enjoy the feeling of playing this particular inversion, you know.
Mm. Have you thought about putting chord symbols above your music? Do you think that would help?
Funny enough, somebody once asked me why there weren't chord symbols in microjazz, and I said I didn't want people to find out how few chords I used.
Don't worry, even the best do it, Christopher.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is I like the fact, I think it is a danger of putting chord symbols in that you're going to end up with less than the full story, if you like. I mean, are you going to put if I was going to put all the chords in, for instance, the piece I just played, it's a C minor to C minor over B flat, but the next chord is A minor 7, and then D7 flat 9, and then G minor, and then A minor 6 over G. What I'm saying is if you put the chords in, it looks fearsome.
Starts to get quite complicated.
It starts to look like a jazz chart, and in fact, I think it's quite nice that without the chords, I can kind of do much more simplified versions of the chords, which are very effective, which children or teachers can learn, without having to know all that jazz theory.
Mm. No, that does make sense. I've often wondered about the chord symboling and how that's used, because it's obviously used lots in pop music. It's always there for guitar players to play along with, but less so in piano repertoire, even though it can be helpful. But I can also see that concept of if you've got four chord changes in a bar and there's lots of flats and sharps and pluses and minuses and slashes, then it does start to look quite confusing.
Well, one thing that's interesting is I'm getting the Microjazz Collection 4 and 5 pieces. I'm putting backing tracks to them. I'm using a very good drummer in Britain who's doing drums to it. I'm providing the piano parts. And I've got a guitar player in Nashville who's a wonderful musician. And I apologized to him. I said, I'm sorry, I'm giving you the full description of what the chords are. And he said to me, when I was playing in a band once, and the bass player said to me, the chord symbols that you see, like in a piece of jazz in particular, but certainly in pop music to a certain extent, is everybody's parts. Yes, it's a description of what everybody's playing. But that doesn't mean you play all the notes.
Yeah, I understand. That makes sense.
So he was saying, therefore, he's not going to try and work his way through every single chord that I've written down. He's thinking, oh, yeah, I can miss that out, and so on.
I always use it as a shortcut as well, which isn't always the best thing. But if there's chord symbols written there and I've got to sight read something and it's not that easy, then I fall back on the chords every time.
Which is why Hindemith is one of the hardest people to sight read.
Yes. I've had to try and play the trumpet concerto piano part, and that's – I basically – wanted to crawl into a hole and pull it in after.
Yeah, because there is no way you can figure it out by looking at it and thinking, oh, that's A7 flat 9 or anything. There isn't anything like that.
It's no reference. It's awful. Oh, I'm glad I'm not doing that kind of level accompanying anymore. That is for sure. So what's the future looking like, Christopher? You've got a lot of projects on the go now. Is there any end in sight with the ideas in your head that you can get out there?
Well, at the moment, I'm working on, I'm just trying to work out what I am working on, because I'm largely working on the 80 days, new things, the connections, things which we've expanded the series quite a bit. I've done a series of preparatory duets, which are also out, and the teacher compliments, which is a lovely idea. I think I'm going to continue that up the series. So it's mainly kind of tinkering around with the existing series as much as anything else. I've also done various concert pieces. I mean, the famous example being the piano sonata done for Giovanni, who we so miss.
Oh, of course, yes. I remember that. That was amazing.
I've got a very fine Chinese pianist I'm working with called Ernest So, and he's actually premiering my Bulgarian suite for solo piano, which is written for a Bulgarian pianist. So it's using Bulgarian folk songs, and that's quite an astringent Bartok-style suite, if you like. I'm also looking to write something which is quite hard, which is a piano trio, there's a piano, violin, and cello for Angela Turner's ensemble.
Oh, Angela in Brisbane, here in Australia.
In Brisbane, yeah, mm. Yeah. And also a second piano sonata, which is being premiered by a Canadian pianist who does a lot of work in China as well. So,
is that already written?
It's already written, yeah.
Wow. Do you enjoy writing those big scale works?
I do, yeah. I mean, I'm not sort of I don't really have any agenda in a funny kind of way. Things come up and I just do them when they come up. I'm not thinking I've got a symphony inside me or anything. I don't know if I have or not, but if a big thing comes up, I'm happy to have a go at it. And I'm particularly pleased with the two piano suites, which are quite large and have been commercially recorded as well. And again, Angela Turner and her partner in Brisbane did a wonderful job of my Italian suite. So I've had some very fine Australian performances of things as well. The other thing, which is a big project which I'm working on, which I'm just mentioning this in passing because it's so interesting, as I said, my wife is a very good composer, but she's got that real melodic gift. And years ago, I produced a whole series of albums. I've done a lot of record production over the years called The Hymn Makers, which were basically taking famous hymn writers and recording with choir and organ or choir and piano, mostly with the adult choir from Coventry Cathedral. And we sold 500,000 of them all together. So it was a big series.
Jeez.
And I was contacted by someone who's high up in the Methodist Church about 6 months ago, perhaps a bit longer, who loved one of the settings I'd done of a piece by Charles Wesley, which was a new tune to old words, basically. And he said, I've got a whole lot of really fine lyrics here, which have never really caught on because nobody's ever written a decent tune for them. So I actually got my wife to write 20 tunes for it. And what I'm in the middle of at the moment is doing a big multi-track project with singers from all over the world and a guitar player, again, in America, a harpist in Edinburgh. There's all sorts of people providing things for me to create a big multi-track recording of these 20 hymns. And I've done all the arrangements, and we're putting that out through 80 days as a book. So one thing which we're doing, which you may be interested to hear, is that book in particular, but also Connections, we're going to gradually make them all available as ebooks.
Yes, I saw that Trinity is releasing their latest series as ebooks.
Now, the advantage of the ebook is that, like the hymns, I've actually got the piano parts. I've been working on this, is something I've been working on assiduously over the last week or two. The piano parts, I've done recordings with a very good piano sound, and they're exactly the same as the music. So you actually have an embedded performance, which is the same as what you're looking at when you look at the sheet music. Mm. And you can turn it on in the ebook. And of course, when you turn the page, the music doesn't stop. So it's not like it's chained to the page you're on, which is good. But the other thing we're doing is embedding a second track, which is the recording with full-blown band and singers and everything. So you're actually getting two versions, one the demonstration recording of just the piano part and the other the demonstration recording with everything.
Right, understand. And the hymns that you created melodies for,
yeah,
they're all hymns from the 16, 17, 1800s or wherever they were, whenever they were.
From the 1800s, yeah.
1800s, that just never really, they're not ones which anyone would recognise because they didn't become popular because the tunes weren't any good.
Because they didn't have any tunes which have caught on. And in fact, the people who asked me to write these things know the repertoire very well, and they just love the tunes that we've ended up with.
I just think, I mean, the Australian hymn book is, I don't know, an inch thick. And I would say that the majority of churches would play, I don't know, 1% of those, because they're the ones, because you want to sing along to a good melody. There's got to be lots more out there that could do with a new tune. Yeah, I mean, you're certainly not slowing down, Chris. Still lots of ideas in you. It's great to hear all that you've got going on, and there's always lots more. And I love that you're both, you're creating new things, but you're also building on what you've already created, because there are so many tunes that are so well loved. I can think of In Connections, just off the top of my head, there was a very cool hoedown around book 4 or 5 or something like that.
Well, that's one thing which I should draw your attention to as well. You probably know about this, but I've got a new book out, which is Connections Duets. There's two books of duets, which are not the preparatory ones. They're quite hard, but the hoedown, there's one called At the Rodeo, I think it's
that's
called.
The one. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Love
There's
it.
An amazing duet version of that.
Ah, great.
And I should perhaps send you an MP3 so you can let people who listen to the podcast can see. But actually, they don't even need to do that. All they need to do is go to my YouTube site, and on it you'll find Connections Duets, and you can see them being played, because I've done videos where I play both parts.
Ah, oh, very cool. All right. Well, we'll make sure we put your YouTube link and also the 80 Days Publishing in our show notes so that people can find those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, Christopher, it's been great to catch up. Was there anything that we missed? I mean, this was a very free-flowing conversation that I really enjoyed because it's been quite a while since we connected.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I can tell I still really enjoy writing and I still enjoy the interaction with teachers and with students. And I may end up doing more and more of it online if this keeps going, but it's just come up and I've discovered that I like doing it and I quite like the medium. You know, it's nice to have that direct contact. As you say, to see everybody in their own living rooms is really amazing. Like you're seeing me in my study. So
exactly.
You know, it's rather nice. The other thing which I should just mention as well is the book called Brighton Bluesy. And that is interesting because it's not with Boosey and Hawkes because I signed to Boosey and Hawkes in 1983. Brighton Bluesy was written in 1976.
Ooh, okay, we're going back, yeah.
When I was 23 years old. And I've had it in my archive ever since and I've always liked them. And so we put it out through 80 Days as a new publication.
Right, okay. Well, that must have been funny listening, going back to that all those years ago.
Well, in a sense.
Is it a bit embarrassing in some ways? Is it like, oh, geez, I've come a long way since this? Or do you look back on it and go, actually, this isn't bad?
No. What I could do, I could do from the start. I mean, I microjazz, in a way, I was already writing pieces like it before Boosey and Hawkes came across them. Mm. And in fact, microjazz, of course, wasn't written for Boosey and Hawkes. It was written for Universal Edition, who I had some books out with. And the person who asked me to write it, left the company and they didn't really know what to do with it. So microjazz actually sat on my bottom drawer for a couple of years because I've always saying to people are always asking me about advice on publishing. And I say, it's a matter of dumb luck. You need to find somebody who understands who you are and what you've done. Otherwise you're up a gum tree as the Beatles discovered, they only got signed by EMI having been turned down by lots of other companies. So you have to hope that somebody gets you and understands
what you're trying to do and what the value in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And therefore, I had. But the other thing to do is to have stuff available in the archive, so that if you do get the opportunity, you've got stuff. And it's not like a second novel where you run out of material straight away. So
yeah, you know,
that's why I think it's good. It's good to keep writing. Mm. Yeah.
Well, we're delighted that microjazz didn't get stuck in the bottom drawer, Chris. It's been a favorite in my studio for many, many years, and many of the teachers listening will be in the same position. So thanks for spending some time with us today. It's been great to see you.
It's been a great pleasure. It's lovely to see you again.
Well, I hope you go and check out some of Chris's great updates, and we'll certainly be letting you know when some of his works that he's been talking about today become available to you. Now, don't forget to join the 5-day challenge. I mentioned it at the start of the episode. Seats are filling up and time is running out. If you want to join us for this, and it's going to make real change in your teaching, I guarantee it. And it's going to be an absolute blast because you're going to get to hang out with me and Sarah Buckley for 30 minutes to an hour over 5 days in the coming weeks. Join us now, topmusic.co/challenge. Next week on the podcast, the fantastic Dr. Erin Parks of the Lotus Center. He's going to be joining us to talk about serving non-neurotypical students. And she calls those students ones with exceptionalities. I really love this word. And we dive into how that came about. We talk about her research, how she got her doctorate and what in, how her own experience with her own children and the students that she's been teaching has helped her build and grow this incredible nonprofit called the Lotus Center. I can't wait to share the interview with you next time. If you did miss anything from today's episode, then remember over at the show notes, we have full transcripts and any links that we've talked about today. That's over at topmusic.co/episode229. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast from topmusic.co. Can't wait to catch you next week. Bye-bye, everyone. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.